This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Best Seat in the House with Jed Williams. On the September 12th edition of the show, Washington Post sports writer Jason LaCanfora joins the show to talk about the Redskins' Monday night loss to the Minnesota Vikings.
How disappointed was the Redskins' coaching staff and team as a whole, considering that was a home game, you had all the new improvements you were bringing to the operation, and let's be frank, that was a very, very winnable football game?
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, is the fact that, you know, had they been able to execute a little, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'd give them a C minus, you know, D plus grade on that. And had they even been able to deliver a C game, they should have been able to win, you know, somewhat comfortably. So that's one that, you know, you look at it in a perspective now and you say, wow, that's huge. You know, it's death and mayhem up here in D.C. People are pulling their hair out, going crazy. Oh, now they got to play Dallas.
Yeah.
So you know what? They beat Dallas and everybody will sort of, you know, temper it. At the end of the year, they have 8 or 9 wins instead of 10 and don't make the playoffs. And you put it in that context and say, my God, they blew that first game and look what it meant. So we'll know more down the line.
Do we ascribe more blame to the offense, the defense, the special teams, or some sort of combination thereof last night?
Oh, yeah, I spread it around. I mean, they're, you know, they've had issues at kicker and punter forever. They refuse to address them. That bit them in the butt. The defense doesn't look like last year's defense. It didn't throughout the entire preseason. And people around here are still waiting for Adam Marchuleta and Andre Carter to do something that makes them somewhat justify that the massive contracts they got. And then offensively, you know, they had 6 months to game plan for this one opponent, and there was a lot of cute motion and a lot of razzle-dazzle and a lot of stuff with Randall L. But the bottom line was, when it got down to just plain moving the ball and you know, straight-ahead football, they couldn't get it downfield. They didn't utilize their speed. And he had 266 total yards, which, and you know, hey, the flip side is it's early, and there are going to be growing pains, and it is going to take them 3, 4, 5 weeks to truly grasp Alshon's system. But they knew that going in and thought the defense would be able to hold them up early on and provide that momentum, create some turnovers, and help them win some ball games. If the defense has the kind of problems in the secondary it had last night, next week at Dallas, I got to think Terrell Owens and Terry Glenn will be able to do much more than Marcus Robinson and Troy Williamson were able to do.
Yeah, Jason LaCanfora, Washington Post. Let's stay right there with the defense. Shaun Springs is out at least for a limited period of time. Pearson Prelude gets hurt last night. Mike Rumpf comes in with Kenny Wright. Was it pretty apparent early on that Minnesota was going to try to victimize that secondary?
There was no doubt about it. I mean, Chester Taylor ended up with 31 carries, but a lot of those were when the game was tight late and they were going a little conservative. I think he might have carried 7 or 8 times on that final drive alone. So for most of the game, they were a one-dimensional team. I mean, in the third quarter, they were averaging about 2.5 yards per carry, and everything was through the air.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people should be thanking their stars. Troy Williamson had 2 drops. I mean, he had Carlos Rogers beat for a 50-yard touchdown. I mean, the ball was perfectly thrown right in his hands, and he dropped it. You know, Brad Johnson was only 2 or 3 drops away from having a monster night. And as it turned out, he had a very, very good night and was, you know, able to pick them apart right down the middle, which is something that Tom Brady and some other quarterbacks were able to do in the preseason, and then Minnesota picked off where those teams left off. And that's why you can say the preseason doesn't mean anything, but I can guarantee you that Brad Childress was looking at some things on tape, saw some quadrants of the field he could exploit, and he went right after.
Then there's Sean Taylor, who's the stalwart back there in that secondary. And Jason, I know he can be a blessing and a curse sometimes at the same time. Was he more a curse than a blessing? Did he get in his own way a couple too many times last night?
I thought there were a couple times where maybe the corner could have actually made an interception or made a play on the ball, and Sean came in late and knocked his own guy around. And then a couple times where his reputation just worked against him, particularly that, you know, what they called the personal foul there along the sidelines where they said he came in late. I mean, that's very iffy. I don't know about that one. The face mask is a different story. I mean, they see a face mask and a guy twisted like that, they're going to call it. But again, Sean's kind of made his own bed. You know, that same, this is the officiating crew last night, I believe, was the same crew that worked the Tampa Bay playoff game where you spat in Michael Pittman's face
right,
and lied about it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're only human here. So, I mean, I'm not saying that there's a vendetta or anything, but the last time that crew saw Sean Taylor, that's what he was doing.
How does
getting himself ejected from a playoff game.
How does he get over this reputation at this point? Because he has the M.O. of being a loose cannon to a certain degree and certainly a headhunter. How does he get out from under that?
I mean, it takes time. I mean, I think he's going to have to show maturity. I think he's going to have to temper himself at times without a teammate intervening or whatever. And I think he'll get there. But, you know, in the short term, he's a guy who officials, you know, when they're watching tapes of previous games, when they're preparing, and when they're talking to the opposing team's coaches, yeah, that bug is being planted in their ear. Hey, 21's a headhunter. Watch out for the horse collar. Watch out for him hanging somebody high. You know, watch out for him taking somebody out on the sideline.
Jason Lockenfora, Washington Post, as we go camping with the Redskins after the 19-16 Game 1 loss to the Minnesota Vikings. Back on offense, let's start with the rushing game. When you put Portis's and Betts' numbers together, that's 18 carries for 61 yards, just about 3 yards a carry. How much of that came back to not just the volume of offense and them understanding the Al Saunders schemes, but the offensive line? How did the offensive line perform yesterday?
I wasn't very impressed. I didn't see the offensive line making a push. I saw the offensive line taking a push. I think part of it, too, was I think in a lot of ways Saunders was in a weird situation because, like, you have Portis, but you don't quite know what you have, and they decide to dress him, but how many carries is too much? How many is not enough? Can he carry the ball 3 straight times? I mean, there were times in the second half where I thought, man, if they start feeding him, he might put this game away. But then, you know, you've got the shoulder issue, and Betts ran hard but didn't accomplish a whole lot when he was in there. I think it was kind of a strange juggling act, and it ended up kind of being off-kilter offensively all night and never really had a leg to stand on. I mean, they weren't getting big chunks downfield, and they weren't running, you know, successfully and grinding it out that way. And it was just kind of a hodgepodge of screen passes and fades and stuff like that. It was kind of off all the way around. There wasn't a whole lot of rhythm to that game,
right,
period.
And Jason, when they finally did engineer drives and move the ball down the field in the red zone, they get inside the 10-yard line a couple of times and squander drives and have to kick field goals. Other than the rushing game, other motives or reasons for the difficulties inside the 10?
I kind of just question, I guess, maybe a little bit of personnel. You make this trade for T.J. Duckett, and, you know, you kind of upset the apple cart of your running backs a little bit, and then the guy doesn't get a carry.
Yeah.
You know, the whole game he dresses doesn't get a carry. You get a high third-round pick. Now, yeah, it's only week one, but, hey, like I said, every game matters. You only get 16 cracks at this. I'm surprised he didn't get anything short yardage. And to me, the other guy is Mike Sellers. Never saw him lined out wide. Never saw him doing a whole lot of motion. He could play H-back, you know, fullback, tight end. You could line him up as a receiver. He's got good hands, hard to bring down once he gets the ball in his hands. He was not a real part of their red zone scheme. And last year, he was probably their best red zone weapon.
Final minute with Jason Lockenfora on the Redskins beat with the Washington Post with us tonight on the Best Seat in the House. The kicking game, John Hall misses a field goal in the closing seconds. It ends up being the difference maker. They stuck by John Hall and his contract during the offseason when the Redskins seemed to make rampant position changes everywhere else. I know there's a lot of football left to be played, Jason, but where does this field goal kicker situation go from here, do you think?
People up here are sick of it. It's just the bottom line. I mean, I think, you know, you would have found a wide majority of people who would have put kicker as the number two, number three priority, period, going into the offseason. You know, now we're into the regular season, coming off of a spotty preseason for John Hall. And then, you know, that's not a 48-yard kick is no gimme. I mean, don't get me wrong, but it's not like he missed a little bit wide. I mean, he missed the net, you know. He missed the upright, he missed the net. And that kick had no chance. So he hasn't made anything over 40 yards the entire preseason and now into the regular season. And they've got a kid, Nick Novak, who, you know, grew up in Virginia, who's sitting out there waiting for a job, who won a game for them last year and kicked very well and has made some progress on his kickoff. I think that's a move that if they wait too long and somebody else picks Novak up off the street, particularly if this Vanderjagt injury lingers in Dallas and he ends up down there, that could be something they regret, because I just don't see them getting 16 quality games out of John Hall after all his injuries and, you know, not being able to handle kickoffs now. And me personally, I wonder about his leg strength. They defend it ad nauseum, but
yeah.
I haven't seen it.
What's your hunch right now about Novak, if and or when they would make that phone call?
I've talked to some of the Knicks people this morning. I mean, they're just waiting. And they feel like they showed very well when he was here. You know, the special teams coach, Danny Smith, has told Nick numerous times that he likes him. You know, my impression is that if they decide to make a move at kicker, Nick is, you know, choice 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
But how long will Nick be out there? I mean, Nick had a really good tryout in Green Bay, made 11 to 12 kicks there. Nick was had another good showing in Arizona's camp, and you know, Neil Rackers is a great kicker, but he's had injury problems, so he's on Arizona's radar. He's on Green Bay's radar. He's on New Orleans, has some kicker issues. He's on their radar.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Redskins, they have to weigh when they make this move. I mean, some people would say week one is a knee-jerk thing, and that's not Joe Gibbs' style. But that could be a nip-and-tuck game in Dallas next week, too. And, man, I don't know.